study session. I would like to call this meeting to order for Thursday, January 25th, 2018. It is now 5:05 p.m. I want you to know that one of our board members, Mr. Brad Rupert, is absent tonight and excused from this meeting due to a family commitment. Could we have a roll call, please?
Here.
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 We do have a quorum present, four board members present, and only Mr. Rupert missing. Is there a motion to approve the meeting agenda for tonight?
I move that we approve this evening's agenda as presented.
Is there a second?
A second.
Moved and seconded that we approve tonight's agenda as presented. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Ms. Harmon?
Yes.
Ms. LaSalle?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
Okay, we'll begin our study dialogue session tonight with a presentation to the board on student-based budgeting for next school year. For those who may not be aware, SBB, as we call it, or student-based budgeting in JEFCO, provides the opportunity for principals with input from all stakeholders to make site-specific student-based decisions on the deployment of resources to obtain the greatest student achievement outcomes. Welcome, Ms. Quanback, Mr. Hsu, Ms. Askelson, Ms. Stewart, and principals yet to be introduced to the board. Dr. Glass, do you have anything to add before we begin this presentation?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, when you're ready and you're entitled to take a moment to get situated, let's make sure the mics are live at the table and begin your presentation when you're ready.
Thank you. I think we're ready. We're so excited we had to come up as you were talking, because we're very excited to talk about it, student-based budgeting. So thank you. So we're thrilled to be here, and we're excited to give you an update on how the budgeting process is developing, and we'll kind of go throughout the spring. And I'm going to take just a minute and allow everyone to introduce themselves before we get going.
Nicole Stewart, Budget Director.
Christopher Hsu, Chief of Secondary Schools.
Jeff Pearson, Principal, Standing Lake High School.
Michelle DeAndrea, Principal at Bell Middle School.
Kathleen Askelson, CFO.
David Alex, Principal Fremont.
Mindy Fear, Principal at Dean Elementary.
Welcome to all of you. Thanks for being here and joining us this evening.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So this marks the fourth year of student-based budgeting, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's different this year, as well as reground ourselves in why we use student-based budgeting. We'll talk about some of the benefits and the challenges, and then have some time for questions, because we really want this to be a conversation. Every year, the central team really reviews the factors, the processes, take into account principal feedback, and there's a very thoughtful process in, can you hear me okay? Okay. Christopher's got it. Thank you. You want to click the next one? Thank you. The budget team is very thoughtful in how they analyze and they change and they revise the factors. And I just want to recognize that coming at this as relatively new to the position, it's been amazing watching how thoughtful they are in doing that. What's been a little bit different this year is we decided to bring our principals in groups by achievement directors and by budget analysts. And so instead of every budget analyst going out to every single school and sitting side by side for that initial meeting, we brought folks together. And they had the opportunity to hear all the same information at once, ask questions, and really benefit from that collective answer. Principals sat side by side with each other, and they shared strategies, ideas. Then there were individual follow-up meetings with budget analysts and achievement directors. So that was a little bit different this year. Additionally, I wanted to call out the mindset that we had this year. knowing that it was a pretty big year of, and will be a big year of change, as we are shifting many of our schools from a K-6 model to a K-5 model. And so recognizing that, we really have had this mindset of, let's get as many dollars out to the schools as we possibly can, with as few restrictions as we possibly can, so those folks who are closest to the school and the needs can make those great decisions. And I'm gonna give you an example of that. It was questions that came up over and over again around kindergarten AMP, for example. We would love for every single school to have art, music, and PE for kindergartners, but what we said to our principals was, that's your decision. We're gonna give you as much money as we can, and you make those decisions based on what you believe the needs are at your school. We had a hard time when we've got some schools that were going down in their budgets because their sixth graders were moving up, and that's an anticipated change. But then to place more restrictions on them didn't seem like the right thing to do. So that was really important to us as we rolled out this process. Go ahead and click to the next one. So again, just regrounding, why do we even do student-based budgeting? Well, it's what I've alluded to already. It's really around giving those folks who are closest to the needs, they know their kids, they know the community, and they're making their very best decisions to give our kids the very best instructional experiences that they can have. That's really at the core of it. All right, go ahead. So thinking about some of the benefits, and again, we'll talk about both the benefits and challenges. So one of the benefits around student-based budgeting, when the factors are published, they're transparent to everyone. We're no longer in this time of principals might call the Ed Center and beg for staffing in August because their numbers have gone up, or there was kind of this, you know, well, if I keep calling and calling, I'll get an additional teacher. They're predictable, the factors are published, everyone knows what the base factor is, and so that allows people to plan much better when it comes to staffing and plan for their needs, so it's more equitable. Our high poverty schools, as you'll hear some of our folks talk about in a few minutes, they're able to plan for unanticipated changes in enrollment. Again, instead of calling the central office when kids walk in the door in August, they can plan for that. It's also allowed principals to be more flexible and innovative. One example I'm gonna call out is actually, so it's up at Elk Creek, and it's what's called a school support secretary. And Ryan Lucas, the principal up there, through the input of his staff said, we know that we need this position to really help workload for our teachers. It didn't currently exist, so with the amazing help of HR and some of our other folks centrally, they created this position, they used their SBB dollars to pay for it. Well, now it's a position that we're likely gonna scale up to multiple schools moving into this upcoming year. So that flexibility to think about what the needs are and then implement is part of the benefit of SBB. Mindy, did you want to talk about some of the equity pieces at all?
Yeah, what we were talking about earlier too, the nice thing about, so Dean has, about 88% free and reduced lunch, and with SBB, I do get that extra 600 and, what is it? 650. See, you'd think I'd have it memorized, but $650 per student that's at risk. And with that extra funding, it does allow us to get a little creative, just like Karen was talking about, and be a little more flexible with how we spend our money to help support our at-risk students. And we have done that at Dean. We've been really creative. The last couple of years, we did budget for a second assistant principal, which helped us get in front of the discipline problems that come in a high-poverty school. It helped us get in and really evaluate our teachers. And now that's something we're going to phase out because we don't need it anymore. But having that autonomy with our budget has allowed us to be creative, and having the little extra funding for the high at-risk, high poverty schools has helped as well.
Yeah, so Karen and Mindy have talked a little bit about you've heard the word flexibility, and that is the same in the secondary schools as well. And I was going to make some connections to Jeffco Generation. So we also talk a lot about innovation. In our secondary schools, we have schools that have actually started up their own innovation funds, trying to create those opportunities for their staff and their teachers to look a little bit differently at situations. And we also have that entrepreneurial spirit that's written into Jeffco Generations. We have schools now that are setting up internship apprenticeship programs. We have 6 different high schools that are engaged in that specifically. And later on in the study session, you'll hear from the Green Mountain principal. She expands on that during that presentation. We also have flexibility and innovation around our instructional coaching programming. We have to have instructional coaching programming in the secondary level. So you will see how it varies from school to school based on the needs of that school. Some schools have a full-time instructional coach. Some schools have part-time instructional coaches that are also part-time teachers. Other schools will rely on their department managers to take on that instructional coaching. So it's all about the programming. But once again, it's up to the schools to decide how to best meet the needs of their school staff, their teachers, and use the monies to hire for that. And Jeff, do you want to talk a little bit about that creative hiring?
Yeah, those of you, I mean, we all know that there was this amazing transition counselor program grant that's been in place in Jeffco. So we've got a chance to work with a transition counselor that would be at the 8th grade at a middle school and then transition with students up to 9th grade to kind of help support what that looks like to transition. In our particular school, and I know in other schools, that is going away this year, that grant. And so therefore, a school either has to pick up the funding and figure out how to support that need. And we all know, we look at readiness for learning in Jeffco Generations. Before students can truly be successful, we better prepare them in the mental health needs. And that's something that's at the top of, I know, everybody's list. What's going on with the mental health supports and the needs of all of our students at every level? And so as we talk about it in our building, and I know some of my colleagues, we better prepare them for what's going to happen in the classroom. So we as a school, through SBB, and I know others, now have the autonomy to at least look at funding to support bringing an additional counselor or some type of a support structure in to support that ongoing need now that the grant is gone. In years past, before SBB, we wouldn't have been able to even probably take a look at that option unless we went to the district and said, hey, there's a need here. Do you think you can fund that? Well, there's probably 25 other needs for everyone that we have in addition to the other schools. So SBB, I think, gave us some flexibility to support the needs of our community and the needs of our kids because that has been an impact, a very positive impact on our building and I know on other buildings to support that transition between 8th and 9th grade. And we feel as a building, and I know through our accountability committee, that has been very important. Therefore, we need to now feel through SBB how we can fund that moving forward. Another example would be the flexibility of hiring different staffing. If Brad were here, he would be able to talk to you about, we have what we call a studio at Stanley Lake, and I know some other schools have this opportunity where we fund a para, and she's there all day. Well, we have 2 teachers per period that are staffed in the studio. Students can come any period of the day and get direct support in that classroom, and it's off of the library. During their off hours, there's tutoring center in there with 2 core teachers and a para and students, and it's open all day long. They can go in there and get on the computer. They can do makeup work. They have direct connection to teachers. We wouldn't have been able to fund that if it weren't for SBB. We have to do that out of dollars. That's something we do through our accountability committee and then also through the needs of our building to say, what are some supports and accommodations we need to support our students moving forward? SBB has given us the flexibility and autonomy to put some creative structures in place to support the needs of our kids.
And, you know, as kind of going on top of that, the flexibility, you know, when we think about the innovation opportunities that we have at our schools and what we're trying to do with our generations document, one of the things that we're finding is that we've got a lot of new staff in our building, and we also have a very solid, great iSTEM program at Bell is a great example. And so we have some need for teachers to get greater learning on problem-based learning, on PBLs, which is really the foundation of our iSTEM program. And so one of the things I'm considering for the future, for the next year, is some kind of part-time coach that's a PBL coach specifically that would be going into classrooms, working specifically with teachers, helping them plan, and doing some training around that to really increase the innovation and really and bring us up to the next level where our school already is, we are ready to go to the next level. And so, again, having been a principal at a school in schools prior to SBB, that would have never even been a consideration, would have never been able to do that. The other thing that we do and I've done over the schools that I've been at is I always send out a survey for my parents and for my teachers to find out what their priorities are. And it really does help us make decisions as a school as to what our community wants in a school. And because we have the flexibility with SBB, we can meet a lot of those requests or a lot of what people are saying are a priority for our community. Didn't do that before because I didn't have the options that I have now. So that's been a great, and it's also given, I believe, the community a lot of buy-in into our schools and a lot more influence onto our schools. So that's been a great thing with SBB.
So there's a lot of benefits to SBB. If you could click for me, that'd be great. But there are challenges too. We want to recognize that. And we'll talk about the challenges really specific to this year, because we do see the benefits outweighing the challenges. But of course, when you know that you want, you know, unlimited dollars for kids in the state of Colorado and you want to do incredible things for kids, you have to make some hard decisions. So specific to this year, it's a year of change, and it's a year of exciting change as we prepare to go from a K-6 to a K-5 model in a number of our schools, but it's change. And so I just have to call this out. I'm incredibly proud of our elementary principals, of the budget analysts, and of course secondary too, but I mostly am working with our elementary folks, the professionalism that they have demonstrated as they have navigated some of those changes, the ability for them to think creatively through the SBB process, to be just collaborative, and their ability to follow the process. In a way, I'm glad this is the fourth year and we're not new to SBB, because the process has really been what we've fallen back on this year. What I mean by that is when you need to make some decisions because you've got some changes to your budget, you need to follow a process. And so they've been collaborative. They've gathered input from their accountability committees, from their staff, and they've been very thoughtful about what those decisions are going to be. But there are more decision points this year. I'll let David talk about that in just a minute, because he's been navigating that at his school. But it's I've honestly been inspired in watching how folks have done this and even come out with some incredibly creative ideas for next year as we're shifting models.
Yeah, so I mean, some of the challenges that we face with SBB is especially with small schools. I mean, Fremont's a school, this year we have about 275 students. Next year with the changeover with sixth grade leaving, we'll be down to about 225. But what's been really good about SBB is it's allowed me to have some real conversations with my community, figure out exactly what the priorities are, what are you willing to give up, what are you willing to accept. I mean, I was very worried about my enrollment in the spring of last year, so worried that I brought in a couple of key community members and I said, what do you hate less? Large classes or multi-age level classes? Not the best question that you want to ask as a first-year principal in Jeffco to a new community where you're trying to build trust. But ultimately, it did work out. We had to cut some corners on copying. We had to cut some corners on technology, on professional learning, but we made it happen. And we made it happen with the community. And my colleagues that have small schools are all facing these same questions too. Again, with the sixth grade move, it is a little bit more challenging this year. But I do appreciate the flexibility. I do appreciate just the additions we got to the base factor for small schools to keep us afloat this coming year. So yeah, it's challenging, but yes, the flexibility is there.
From a secondary lens, there are challenges. Before I get into those, I just wanted to acknowledge the budget department. We've got our budget, Karen calls it our budget friends.
They are our friends.
And throughout all these challenges, when they come up, what I like, and there's a statement we have here in Jeffco, that we are a huge school district that becomes really small really fast when we need it. And when these challenges come up, it's the principals and the budget analysts and the achievement directors that are working closely together to try to work out what these challenges are and try to work through them collaboratively. And I respect that about our colleagues, and I think the process works out well. But there are challenges that exist in the secondary world around this. And one of them come, and we'll have Jeff and Michelle jump in here a little bit. One of them is because of the transition that's taking place with our middle schools, of course. We made the decision that because we have 12 schools transitioning from a 7-8 to a 6-8 model, that we decided we were going to change the base factor, that model, throughout all of JEFCO. So because of that, we have schools that are already in that 6-8 model. We have schools that are transitioning into them next year, and then three more after that. So factors are going to change a little bit, and there's always those nuances and challenges that come along with it. The biggest challenge, I'm going to jump in here, and then Michelle can lean in, for middle schools is the unknown regarding enrollment. What we can do right now, and Jeremy Felker's team is doing a dynamite job with this, along with Tim Reed, is we can say we know the students at our elementary schools who are right there in the fifth grade right now. So we can anticipate those students moving into our middle schools. That always doesn't happen as cleanly as we think. What we also can't anticipate is choice enrollment. Now, as we move to the 6-8 model, there is more choice out there for parents, more options. They are going to the interest nights that are happening right now, and they're really making some choices about where they want their children to go over 3 years. So that's going to change some numbers around. That is a challenge for middle school principals as they try to set their budget and decide on hiring.
I think that Christopher covered it pretty well. Right now, if you think about it, most of the middle schools that are making the transition are going to have 2/3 of their kids are going to be new next year, and it's the only year it's ever going to happen. Right now, Bell does have sixth graders, so we have some. So we're going to be about half of the students will be new next year. Nevertheless, that's the big unknown. And right now, as we follow the timeline, which I know is at the end of the presentation, you follow the timeline for when we're supposed to have a draft budget done and so on and so forth. It can bring a lot of anxiety because our choice enrollment isn't even in yet, and our draft budgets are due by the end of the month. But you know, knowing how it goes and it'll reopen and we'll have opportunity to really make those adjustments, it just is causing a little bit of extra anxiety this year. But I also know that we'll have time to make those adjustments. Right now, my budget's pretty far off from what my anticipated enrollment is, so making some decisions about budget is kind of on a hold until we find out some more clear figures. But it'll all be fine. We'll have plenty of time to get that figured out. So I think you covered it pretty well. I will say another challenge of SBB really is it does create more work, a lot more work. It has created a lot more work, I think, for the principals and for the administration. But I would say it's absolutely worth it for me. I feel like it's, and I think most of my colleagues would agree, it's worth the work because of the flexibility that we have, even though it does create a lot more work.
At the high school level, we have the benefit of having an alternative education factor of $115,000, and that is, it's consistent, it's solid, no matter the enrollment of the school, the free and reduced lunch percentage factor of the school. We like that. It does present some challenges when we have some high schools that are saying, all right, we're going to be really innovative, and we're going to create this type of programming. We do have some challenges when it comes to an IB school, and Jeff's going to talk a little bit about that.
And I'm not sure it's just IB. I would say it's any number of things, but IB brings its own level of funding and discourse, I believe, to the expectations to run an IB program because of the expectations IB places on schools to train teachers and to send them off to get the training that's expected. I know we've done a great job, and I know Dr. Glass has supported some work that we're now doing here in JEFCO with Susie, who's Van Skoik, who's connected and has done some work around bringing the IB schools here in JEFCO together and begin having some pedagogy workshops and some things going on around what we can do here in JEFCO. But it does bring a challenge because it is an extreme factor that you have to budget for to train and keep staff trained in this program, because as programs and curricula changes, those teachers need to continually go get recertified and retrained. And typically a lot of those trainings take place exterior of Denver, Colorado. There are a lot of other places to go to get those specific trainings. So I will say that there are some challenges when it comes to specific programs. The analogy I would give is sometimes in a high school sport, you run a football program, it's a lot more costly to run a football program than it would be across country. Neither is any maybe more important. It's important to the kids that are a part of that, but the funding needed to run a football program and get kids where they need to be as opposed to running a cross country program may be slightly different as you think of it from that lens.
Next slide is the 2018-2019 timeline. So in our process guide, which is an incredibly detailed booklet that our budget department puts together, and if you haven't read it, I would say get a nice glass of wine, maybe a cold beer, and sit down and read through that. We'll answer any questions you have. But it really details, or anything else. it really details out our program and what SPB is all about. This slide right here is a great snapshot for you and for principals just to give an idea of the thinking throughout the school year. And because throughout the school year, there's always something that schools need to be doing around SPB. There's constantly those meetings that are happening between the principals and the financial secretary, the budget analyst, the achievement director, to make those changes as enrollment changes. They have to have the conversations. And especially right now, this time of year, December into January, the conversations have been taking place at schools with the staff and now with the School Accountability Committee around what are our budgeting priorities. And that information now, the principals have that so they can make decisions as they're putting their budgets into Hyperion and then submitting them by February 9th. The other thing that's happening is our SACs now have the DAC budget survey that's out there. So the SACs chairs and the principals are now putting that data in. The DAC budget subcommittee will have that, and they will make a report to you folks. You'll know trend-wise, systemically, what it is our priorities are as a district. So that kind of gives a timeline of what principals are looking at during the school year. This slide, we'll talk a little bit about the base factor. You've heard us talking about base factors and equity factors and the elementary impact on alternative education. You can compare 2017-18 base factor to the 2018-19 base factor. And I want you to know these decisions are made on the base factor throughout the entire school year. As budget analysts are working with principals and achievement directors and compiling all this information, they're making decisions on how base factors can change and be adjusted a little bit. And some examples I can use is the middle school base factor changing once again. I remember the day that Karen Quambeck and I walked into Kathleen Askelson and Nicole Stewart's office and said, okay, we are going to transition 12 middle schools to the 6-8. And Nicole said, okay, here we go. And so that was a shift. That was a change. And she looked in my eyes. She said, we're doing this. So that was a change that they need to look at the base factor because it was time that we knew the majority of our middle schools were moving to that. We had to change the base factor to meet the needs of those schools. Now, we know that the base factor is going to shift again next year as we have the 12 schools transition and then the 3 schools after that. So that's one example right there. And then the high school base factor changed a little bit. High school principals knew about this. As we were looking at the campus security program and how we fund campus security, the decision was made that the money to fund our campus security officers was actually scooped from our high schools, and it now rests with the Security Emergency Management Department. So the high school base factor did drop a little bit, but the staffing remains. It's just managed, and the training is managed through a different department. So two examples there of the base factor.
Okay, we wanted to talk about the equity factor. So you can see up here that shifted pretty dramatically for the K-5 from last year. And the reason for that is because we had to add additional dollars to the number of schools that fell below 300. So we increased that, knowing they still had to provide the same amount of staff members as far as a principal, assistant principal, secretaries, things like that. So we had to adjust that a little bit. The 6-8 one, you'll see it also shifted a little bit, but that's one we'll see shift again next year because of the 3 schools that have not converted with the 6th grade move yet. The high school remain the same. We still have the plateau factor in there, which you don't see. So the plateau, if you remember, that's what helps schools that are dropping by maybe 1 student. If they were going to fall into a different category under that equity factor, it won't impact them as heavily. It's a range of enrollment numbers that they would have to drop before they would fall into another category.
So now we move into our last slide, which is the principal panel. And if you, board members, if you have questions for us that we could answer, we are here for you.
Okay. Questions or comments from the board?
I've got a few. First of all, thank you for this very thorough presentation. I'm glad that principals at each level were a part of the process. That just shows that you are collaborating together and you, I'm sure, provided input, especially small schools, which is what most of my questions are about. And I really appreciate that collaboration. And so with that, I wanted to ask a question. Ms. Quambeck, you mentioned earlier my question is, how are high poverty schools able to plan for unanticipated fluctuations? I don't understand that.
Sure.
Sure. So one of the ways they do that is
that's the biggest question I get from those schools. Like, how can I possibly plan? I had to give $500K back this year.
Right. So it depends on the school. Many of our high poverty schools, and I'll let even David and Mindy weigh in, if they have carry forward, they use that to plan for enrollment changes. I think where we have to watch is if they're seeing enrollment declines year after year after year, then we may need to look at, do we need to do something different at that school? How are we going to build that enrollment back up? If it's a 1 or a 2 year fluctuation and they're going up and then they're going down or going up, or the kids are coming in, you know, in September, so after school has started, it's that carry forward that they tend to use to cushion for that. And I'm not sure if Mindy or David want to jump in on that at all.
So, Karen's hit the nail on the head. It's all about that carry forward, planning for the future, making sure you have that contingency to plan for enrollment drops or enrollment increases. Mm-hmm. Remember, something that I did last year was I had some contingency, but then I had one teacher that was effective. She was a temporary, and another that was on loan from a different school. They're both high-quality teachers, but I said to them, look, it's in your best interest to find a continuing position someplace else because I'm not confident that I can fund you. So then I had that extra, you know, cushion in case the enrollment dropped really far. It turns out that I was able to bring back 1.5 positions and maintain my staffing structure, but ultimately they found what they needed and I found what I needed.
I think one other piece I would add to that, I've watched over the last couple of years, our budget analysts get even more, I'm hesitant to use the word aggressive, but I'm going to, it's aggressive in a good way, and they've really pushed principals on, if you think you're going to drop by 10 kids even, you have to put this into contingency. You've got to plan for that. You might think you're going to get X number of kindergartners, but let's plan conservatively. And so as they do that, we see schools are better able to be conservative with their budgets moving in, and then they make those adjustments when they need to, when they watch the kids. I think what we're trying to avoid in many cases, again, is that that shifting of staff after kids have already walked in the door. And sometimes that does happen. Sometimes we have had to, you know, really take care of people and share across schools and make some last minute decisions. I think those are the exceptions. It's more about planning year to year to year and looking at those trends. And if there are, you know, declining year after year after year, then we have to think differently about that school.
Okay, thank you. So when I was looking at your chart, I was also, I was expecting, because when we voted in 2016, June of 2016, for the middle school transition, we did speak, we talked a lot about, you know, how are we going to compensate for, you know, large sixth grade, you know, we've gone over this, right? And so, and the idea was, well, there's a small school factor for our middle schools now because most of them are pretty small. So when I looked at the base factor, I was kind of expecting it to go down more. And for middle schools, I think it went down $65 per pupil. And the elementary went up a lot. And I don't know the answer, but I was wondering why, are you worried about unintended costs to the middle school transition and just playing it really safe this year? Or do you think you're right on with the...
So I'll answer, and then I know Nicole's about to say something. She's ready. She's got it. One of the things, again, I've been impressed with is how thoughtful they've been. The budget analysts, you know, actually went through and modeled out for the different schools and said, could the school continue to run the program based on the dollars that we know we're going to give to them because of the different factors that are in there, including the base factor? And so they went through really with a fine-tooth comb to see how that would impact them. Now, with that said, I'll let Nicole take it from there because she understands it on a much deeper level. I just was impressed with how thoughtful they were around that and looking at individual schools and even letting us know, gosh, we have this one where we might need to support a little bit differently, and we have them flagged to do that.
So the process with the base factors, the first step we take is incorporating in salary increases. So we had salary increases this year that we needed to factor into that base. So we took that into consideration first to make sure they had enough when we knew the average salary of every position was going up. From there, that's exactly what we did. We took the elementary and we looked at what they needed in order to still function, knowing how small some of those schools would go. We tried to incorporate most of that into the base, but had to do some of that through that size factor that we talked about. The middle school base, the idea was they've always been at the highest because they only had two grades. With gaining another grade, they're gaining that additional dollars per student that would help them. And so that's exactly what we did. We looked at every single middle school and how much money they would be getting. What did that equate to for number of teachers, maintaining the same programming that they have? And every analyst was confident that we could help them make that work.
Okay, thank you. And then lastly, we've talked about all of us. Well, I'll speak for myself. Whenever I visit an elementary school or did last fall, there's like, don't forget us. I know all the attention's going to the middle schools right now and the middle school transition, and it should. Please don't forget us. We're going to be smaller, and I'm very, very, the principals were very, very concerned about being able to provide, make the what they've been providing. And so, you know, our schools are a little smaller and the base factor has increased and the school size factor has compensated a little as well. Have you spoken? You are a small school, and I'm hoping that all of our, because I'm sure we'll be bumping into them again, that all of our very small schools don't have to choose between a teacher librarian and a counselor or a mental health professional and office staff or I just want them to be able to, do you feel fairly confident that our small schools are gonna be able to provide the same accessible education as our schools of 400 and above with all of your juking
of numbers? You can take
a verse
and then, yeah, go ahead.
It's a loaded question, but if it's not, I think our board is committed to support our small schools however we can, and I know that we're freaking out last fall.
Let me jump in on that first. I think what our staff has done in the rebalancing of the SBB numbers is to try and create equity so that our small schools are able to provide the same level of programming that our larger schools can. So that's why there's shifts that appear from the middle school to the elementary schools to sort of recognize that change in economy of scale. We don't have a single school who is able to provide all that they would like in all the areas that you mentioned. We have resource inadequacies across the board that have really been present since the Great Recession. I know that you know that from visiting schools, but all these folks, as they go through the SBB process, they're faced with making wicked choices. Do I want to have small class sizes? And in order to do that, I don't have interventionists, or I don't have a full complement of specials, or I don't have a fully staffed office. So those wicked choices are present. Or do you decide I want to have those things, and in order to do that, I have to have class sizes of near 30 at the elementary school. So I don't think that we can fix the wicked choices that that our folks have to make because they make budgeting decisions, but we can try to make it where all of our schools are able to provide an equitable experience to students.
Thank you. And I know this is evolving still, and I appreciate that the plateau was implemented because I think that was very helpful. And I hope you continue to listen to our principals and especially the small school principals and make sure that they're not being forced to make decisions that our schools of 700, 600, or 500 are having to make and maybe rebalance if that is the case. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Jump in and then I'll toss it over to David because I see he's processing and got some things to share. I think what's interesting to watch right now, and I guess I should call out, we absolutely are side by side with our principals, especially the small school principals. You know, we're talking with them about what are you thinking, what are you planning, where are your decision points, what process did you follow, where are your most urgent needs. What's interesting is they're identifying, well, where are their efficiencies? An example being, well, I might not need four paraprofessionals. I think I need two. And they are making hard decisions. I'm going to call that out. But another example might be if I've got an itty-bitty school and they've had two secretaries or two and a half secretaries, they're thinking about, gosh, am I going to have as much foot traffic coming into the office? What are the needs? And so they're prioritizing what those are. And in some cases, they do have to make some hard decisions as they're thinking about the programming throughout the school. But again, I've been so impressed with how creative they've been, how thoughtful they've been, and thinking about even sustainability and long-term, and even some innovations because of that. You know, there's that book, Beautiful Constraints, that really says if you've got this box that you have to live within and you've got to figure out what you can do to be creative, to provide things for kids, for example, those constraints sometimes force you into a creative, innovative solution. But there are hard decisions that they're making. David?
Yeah, I mean, I think my thinking's in line with Dr. Glass and with Q. There are very hard decisions to make for small schools. Again, it's a site-by-site decision. I mean, just, you know, for instance, yeah, I mean, do you have an instructional coach? Do you have a halftime instructional coach? What happens to your library? I mean, schools have gotten creative, like having volunteers just being there in the afternoon for book checkout right before they pick up their kindergartner. They're there, they want to pick them up, and they can give back to the community. So yeah, you have to be creative within the structure. Is the structure sustainable over time? I really don't know. I mean, it's decisions that need to be made here at the board, here with leadership, and as well at the state level. But yeah, it's challenging for small schools, it's challenging for medium-sized schools, it's challenging for large schools, it's challenging across the board. But yeah, the creativity is key, and just having those key conversations with your community to make those hard decisions.
Okay, I'm going to jump in with one quick question. I'm going to start with one quick question. I am looking at the timeline, and I want to understand better what happens between March and November. Particularly August and October seem to be critical times, and I want to understand what principals do and how budget works when students show up that first week of school and then when October count happens. Can I hear more about that?
I'll just start. That's actually one of the most stressful times for me, and especially in a high poverty school, high mobility school. My enrollment already has changed by several kids. Last year it changed by 40 from October to January. And you know, you don't see any dollars, unfortunately, for those kiddos, but that's the reality of a high mobility school. But in those times, it's different every year, but you're either hiring. Or this year, I had to have hard conversations with a couple of people and cut a couple positions because of unexpected loss of enrollment with our new boundaries in the Alameda area. So it is a stressful time. I think you're always meeting with your staff and you're meeting with your community and getting input once again. At least that's what I had to do. I had to rally in August and say, here's the reality. The kids aren't coming through the door. What do we need to do? And so I think, just like you're doing it now, you have those same conversations at that time. And in high poverty schools as well, the challenge is our students don't always come in and enroll or register, I guess I should say, until the first day of school and like, hi, I'm here. And typically 50 or so kids, that happens to us every year. And so it's really a challenge to know exactly how to staff. And so that it's a really stressful time. And it's constant just having communication with different stakeholders.
So can I just clarify, you are having your budget adjust up and or down in August as numbers change, and your budget is adjusting up and or down in October?
No, it really just adjusts in October, but that's something I'm paying attention to because I know the numbers and I am doing my own calculating.
You're looking at the history and
yes,
seeing what might
exactly.
I need to anticipate in my
yep.
budget.
And
okay.
The budget analysts are right there with them through mm-hmm. those months, too, trying to yes. help support what that will look like when they do see their October numbers come in.
Okay. So one of the reasons you first, Mr. Pearson.
I just wanted to touch base from a high school level. One of the issues we really deal with is that choice application piece. Because we could get 100 choice applications and I could accept all 100. I don't know how many truly show up, and I'm sure it's at all levels, until that first day of school. And even then, my budget is based on what I had the year previous. And so as you think about always trying to budget ahead, a year ahead, yes, we have to think about some of the carry forward, because in our building, we've lost students for 10 years. This is the first year we've actually gained in students in population. So I always had to think back and put some money away, thinking if we lose 15, 20 students, what does that impact? Well, we had a huge influx of kids this year. We thought we would go up, and it takes some strategizing to see what that looks like and projecting for that. But when you're always working from the year previous budget and you're trying to work ahead, that choice application piece becomes a big tier. And we've talked about this, I know, at the board level and leadership level for years. How do we make that process more streamlined so that we truly know or have a better indication of students? If they accept my school and they accept Green Mountain, they accept Arvada West, how can we tell kids or parents, please, let us know which one you want to go to. It's okay. I'm not going to take it personal. But I really would love to know if you truly want to come to my building or go to Arvada West. I'd love to know that before we start school in August.
So one of the reasons I asked this question in particular is because I'm looking at an account ledger, and I've watched that carry forward number go up considerably from 10 million to 22 million. But I want to know from you all as professionals, what do you need to see the board looking for in a budget or an approach to SBB that rightly acknowledges, for example, is 5% the right carry forward, and does that create the room? Is there some other mechanism you need that could create the buffer for enrollment increases and decreases, and in a way that can allow us budget flexibility to recover dollars that might otherwise sit, because you're rightly thinking about how to insulate your school community from major changes? So I want to hear from you, boots on the ground in school buildings. What's the right way to make sure those carry forward dollars serve the purposes you need them to? What's the right mechanism for adjustments to enrollment, and when and how? And creating the flexibility to make the most of dollars for things like compensation, mental health supports, et cetera.
I'm gonna jump in first just to clarify. So we've just finished our 2 weeks of student-based budget meetings, and that's the achievement directors brought together all their principals along with their budget analysts and the chiefs and Nicole. And as we were talking about carry forward, we were talking about the 22.5 you're talking about right now. We were saying carry forward is important. We've got to be careful, and we've got to be good managers with the money, because as you said, it's ballooned over the years to 22.5. So we were talking about principals saying it should be 5% of your discretionary fund. We also talked about three categories of flexibility for principals, and one of them addresses kind of what we've been talking about with the panel, and that's enrollment. And you heard Mindy talk about it, you heard Jeff talk about it. We have schools, and we know of schools that have high fluctuation in enrollment. And those schools, they know about those high fluctuations. They know because of trend data over time. And like Jeff said, they're seeing a change up there right now. Mindy can anticipate up and down by 50. So the principals know this, the budget analysts know this. So that is going to be outside of that 5% of their discretionary fund, is to say, if you know you've got that high up and down, well, you need to be smart in your budget, just like you would with your household. And part of that carry forward, you need to be budgeting that and knowing that you've got that high flexibility up and down. So principals have been really strategic about that. The other category is around technology. So with Jeffco Generations coming out, and we know we've got schools all over Jefferson County that are looking into Chromebooks. They're investing in iPads. So this is part of that innovation as well. So we're saying to principals, if this is part of your school's vision, then that costs money. You have to have money ahead of time to invest in these Chromebooks, because you've got to order them ahead of time so they're coming in. So principals have been budgeting for a number of years to do this. So that, once again, is not fitting within that 5% of your discretionary, is to say, we need this amount of money. That's why our carry forward is high. But once again, the principal, the budget analyst, the achievement director, Karen and I are going to know that this is what that money is for. So if somebody from the community would bring up a concern around that, because we are a transparent school district, that principal could easily say, this is what that's for, and justify that. So those are some of those opportunities and some of those categories, and just to be flexible. The last category of those three is innovation. And Dr. Glass has brought that to us. You voted on the Innovation Acceleration Fund. That's happening in some of our schools. Well, we have schools that they have these great ideas, and they're already thinking about these, and they want to innovate. So once again, if the school can make sense of it, they have a plan in place, They know how much it costs. It's sustainable. That's important. There's benchmarks along the way. So we're not just throwing money at something, but we really need to see it's making gains in student achievement, culture, whatever this happens to be. So those are the three categories, once again, as we're planning, and it's above the 5% of that carry forward, the discretionary fund, we can make sense of that to the community, and it means something. There's some clarity. So if that helps you folks out, that was part of that budget conversation. So
I would also say that schools, and I won't speak to all levels, but there's always winners and losers no matter what when it comes to bonds and things and all those pieces that come across. And I will tell you that in the past, we've passed some mills and bonds that have supported restructuring and refacing of some great schools and put some things in schools that make it look magnificent and have changed, restructured technology and other pieces. I will tell you there's schools that have lost in the years that we haven't passed. And so when you look at equity and you think about those pieces, schools that I know of and some of my colleagues, we try and plan and fund to support some of the needs of our building that we knew we didn't get funded through some of those pieces. So sometimes there's upgrades to the building that don't always get to the top of the list when it comes to a district this size. So for instance, there's things in my building that I know aesthetically, if I'm going to have 100 choice kids come to my building, well, when they walk through my doors, I want them to walk through and say, I want to go to school here. I don't want them to walk through and go, wow, I'm not sure this is the right place for my kiddo to go. Look what's going on here. So building principals, I think, have to think about, you know, providing that environment so that kids want to come to school there. So we want to provide that. So a lot of us then think about how do we strategically plan for down the road like we would in our personal budget. We've got these big ideas of what we want to do. Well, we got to begin to start putting money away for that. And so I think that's where we work with our budget analysts and with our achievement directors to say, here's our plan. And I think those three areas that Christopher aligned talk about, it isn't just let's save money to save it and let's see where it needs to be spent. There are specific itemized reasons that we want to save some of those dollars, and there's specific reasons outside of just for technology or other issues. There's bigger pieces that we need to plan for.
So do you feel you have the autonomy to do that as a building principal outside of the three categories that Mr. Hsu just gave us, if it doesn't fit neatly in there, to go above that discretionary piece to make sure that you are meeting the needs of your building and having that autonomy under SBB to do that?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I believe that that has been one of the bonuses for SBB and the collaborative environment that we have through achievement directors and the work that we do in JEFCO. And I think, as Christopher said, the large district becomes very small very quickly. When you need a question answered and you need to get to the basis of here's what I want to do, everybody's there to say, here's how we can do it. Let's make it happen.
Thank you. Another question that I have is related to the kind of difficult decisions that happen, sometimes because you're small, sometimes because of the population you serve, and more is always better. And right now, the reality is we work within a scarcity environment. Things could be much better. They could also be much worse. I've heard about stories throughout the state of Colorado where we recognize that as hard as the trade-offs are in JEFCO, there are school districts, 48% of them in the state of Colorado, that run four-day school weeks, and we now have a metro area district considering the same. So I remember that even before SBB, there were trade-offs in decision-making on FTEs regarding mixed grade or crazy-sized classrooms. Those exist within SBB as well. One of the questions I wonder about is what would it look like? And I do want to give significant credit. When I, for example, was able to sit in a conversation between a principal and a budget analyst and really listen in as they kind of haggled through, that was a great way to spend a school visit, and it was really impressive, and the collaboration is deeply admirable. I also have listened to accountability committee and conversations at schools, and those have been phenomenally collaborative, and I'm really glad there's this mechanism for communities to weigh in and to better understand and to really have a voice in what decisions are made. But I also know there are some decisions that are really, really painful, and it's things like art, music, and PE provided by paraeducators. It's like mixed-grade classrooms, which creates a lot of fluctuation in staffing, and that's really hard on a staff and on a school. That existed before SBB, but I know some school districts utilize more of a hybrid model that expects certain things to be a little more solid. What are your thoughts on that? SBB seems to create a lot of flexibility for local decision making, but are there decisions or trade-offs that shouldn't be on the table, in your professional opinion?
Well, the one thing that I think is a trade-off that shouldn't be on the table is anything that involves student safety. So I think that might have been, and I honestly don't know if that was one of the reasons why security, you know, campus security guards are now, you know, under the purview of our emergency management crew, because that is something that I think shouldn't be on the table as far as fluctuation. You know, and that also kind of goes to a building, you know, the safety of a building and the facility itself. So making sure that the facility itself is a safe environment for students to be in is something that the district does take care of in an amazing way. We've got an amazing facilities group, and they're doing the very, very best. I could tell you a story about air conditioning, which I won't go into, but they did an amazing job. But there are still, I would say, with facilities, there are still some inequities within the facilities around the district that, is it a safety issue? In some cases, it can still be. And in others, it's just a matter of being in a really warm and welcoming environment for learning.
I don't want to jump in too quickly if there's other comments. I have just one last question.
It's a system, and the system works together. And I believe the collaborative environment that we have, checks and balances are there. So I don't think you'll have a rogue principal or school that goes off and does something that's goes off the board that, wow, wait a minute, we need to have some more of a solid plan in place. I think a true system has good checks and balances, and that's where leadership comes into place. And if we're working with our achievement directors and other parts of the system and they work together, I think we solve those problems through that collaborative environment. Therefore, you don't have to worry about that. Some have to have a solid, some don't. SBB, let it work. Let the groups work and collaborate to make the most effective transitions or decisions based on their individual communities, with the leadership and with the decision-making being a collaborative approach.
So for you internally, even though those kind of tough trade-offs can come up, typically the trust and collaboration between district and school staff is strong enough that those honest conversations are happening, and I'm seeing lots of nods, which is encouraging. Yes. One last question for me, and this is kind of a bugaboo that I have, and I want to open it up to you. Not specifically my bugaboo, but really, do you have a bugaboo that you feel like is an outlier in the SBB system that constrains, maybe works against all those wonderful factors like transparency and autonomy, flexibility, equity? For me, it's the kindergarten revenue stream. I really appreciate that you elementary schools are providing phenomenal kindergarten education, and you're navigating a budgetary situation that really is nobody's fault, though certainly I would love to see the state of Colorado honor our kindies as whole people. But until that time that we don't have to face that challenge, that one is my bugaboo, and it feels like it undermines a little bit of the equity we're striving for. Do you have any experience with that, or do you have another bugaboo that you think in the system just feels like a fly in the ointment?
I'll just agree with you. I mean, especially in, I'll pick that up as my bugaboo too. But at a school like mine, I don't charge anyone. I mean, I have 12% that aren't free and reduced lunch. And year after year, we vote as a priority to fund them, everyone, for free, because it doesn't seem equitable to say you 10 out of you 75 need to come up with $2,700. And we've just made it a priority, and the surrounding, my colleagues around me do the same, right? So if I start charging, guess what? I'm losing enrollment, and then it's a double whammy. So I agree. I mean, I'm just gonna second that. My other bugaboo is a big one, and I mentioned this earlier. It's the whole October count is so hard, and this is not something you can change, but it's so hard on schools with high mobility. Everything, every dollar I get is based on an October count that isn't relevant for me. I change every year throughout the year. I fluctuate. This, just in the last 2 weeks, I've gained 15 students and lost 10. And, you know, but I never, ever see the dollars. Last year, I literally grew by 40 and never saw the dollars for those kids. And that's a huge bugaboo for me, but nothing, I know that that's not a district thing.
It's not, but it certainly is something that we can hold on to in our mind, because we're having conversations with people who are thinking about that and trying to consider if there are.
Because that one time count is really limiting.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate all your answers, and I want to compliment all of you for the ongoing work for 4 years to our financial staff, You all are rock stars, and we really appreciate it. And to our school leaders and the staffs you support, thank you for your great work. Dr. Glass, I also want to compliment you because you've stepped into a situation where you said we're going to create in a year of change as much consistency as possible. And I really want to honor the fact that what we're seeing is an ongoing recognition of some of the things that we keep fighting for at the state level, which is parity, treats like schools the same, equity and adequacy. And so I just want to compliment you and your leadership for trying to ease this ongoing continuous improvement.
Well, I'll accept the compliment and pass it on to the staff that have worked to set this up. They're really the ones that are responsible for continuing the system and working to evolve it. I would just say that I'm a proponent of these kinds of budgeting systems. I know that they do come with challenges, and these folks have shared with you what those challenges are, but on balance, I hear principals say they would rather have this than a sort of centrally directed budgeting system. You make a great point around that there are trade-offs with that. When you shift toward a more autonomous and school-based model, you do end up with less sort of systemness when it comes to some programming options, and that's the trade-off that you make. There are some things you can do to work against that, to establish guidelines around staffing for certain programs or models. You can have oversight from our budgeting supports. You can have oversight and support from our achievement directors to help principals make sure that we've got equitable programming available at schools. But in general, you want to defer to the building principal to make the final decision. One other point around this October count issue, we can also do some things in terms of trying to evaluate, rather than what was the firm October count number, we could look at shifting this process going forward to say what was the average count in the school, and we staff it or we budget it based on that instead of what was merely on the purely the October count. But because shifting that and adding dollars later in the school year is not that simple. If you had an infusion of students and then you're trying to add staff in October or January or March, if you're a high school, it's impossible because you have to redo the entire master schedule. In an elementary school, it's still disruptive. Are you splitting a class into? So that's not an easy answer either. We should, I think, look at if we have schools with high levels of mobility, how could we make a better determination or estimate around what their average enrollment is going to be over the course of the year and then assign their SBB based on that. That might be a change that we look at going forward.
I saw a smile with that one. For what it's worth, you all have a board that I have, I think, to my colleagues' credit, really paid attention to and continued to voice their concern about a need to not constantly be making trade-offs. We really want to be doing better when it comes to funding K-12 education, and we continue to carry that conversation forward on your behalf, and we hope to do more of the same.
Ms. Stevens, can I lean in and say one more thing?
I haven't spoken yet.
Yeah, she's got it.
Oh, Ms. Harmon, I just want to lean in and acknowledge, we've talked a lot about the partnership between principals, financial secretaries, budget analysts, achievement directors. I also want to acknowledge, colleagues here to my left, as these decisions are taking place in schools, they are talking with Catherine Baldwin-Johnson about ESL programming. They're talking with Linda Reyes-Quinones and Carrie Mafoni about title funding. They're talking about the assistant directors of special ed. At one of our SBB meetings, there's Amy Allen, who's sitting down with all of her principals talking about, do you need to buy up? Are you thinking about that? So there are partnerships that happen all across the system, and principals are constantly leaning in and having conversations with these experts, Roger Dowd about GT Center program, just to make sure, once again, they're meeting the needs. So it's great when these situations are happening, and you saw those dates up there. There are phone calls and meetings happening all over Jeffco constantly to access these professionals to say, what should we be doing for the benefit of our students?
Okay, and I think, Ms. Harmon.
No, go ahead. I thought we were going around. We're fine.
All right, well, my observation actually is fairly quick. I think that I saw lots of nods that, this is probably as good a system as we're going to come up with. What I like about the system, and what I suspect you like about it as well, is that we put these critical and very challenging decisions closest to the students who are receiving the services. That's a plus in my mind. And frankly, as I listen to all of the issues and the challenges that we face, I do know the answer. And it is about this simple. If we could multiply every factor in that budget process by some number like 1.5 or maybe 2. I don't know the answer to that, and I see you smiling. Kathleen likes 2. But my point is somewhat facetious and somewhat sincere, because we are faced with limited resources. The decisions you make every day are difficult, they're challenging, and I appreciate it that you are making them and that they are being made close to the students. And I would like to multiply every number in this formula by at least 1.5. And that's a goal that we can set for down the road, and perhaps someday the state of Colorado will more appropriately fund education, and we'll get to the point where we can have that conversation. And I would look forward to that. Ms. Harmon.
I truly don't have that much to say, but in terms of a dialogue, thank you for addressing the equity ranges that are in there. That sometimes when people just look at that slide, it looks a little harsh. And then what happens in between there, that those equity ranges of what happens when you fall within there are important in terms of our budgeting and what that looks like when you go over by a couple students or under. And some of those harsh realities, it's difficult for principals to be able to gauge that. We understand that. And I will agree and disagree with a little bit of what Ron said, is that I think we need to continue to work at this. And I can't remember if this is our third version or our fourth version, but it's an evolving thing, and focusing continually on the inequities that continue to exist, and that we are prioritizing that. And that it isn't a perfect system, but that equity piece, we hear about it all the time in our buildings. And we wish we could do more. We wish we could do something different with those ranges or make all these accommodations, but there isn't a perfect cutoff or a perfect range. But they're in there. I just wanted to highlight that. It's the glass half full, the glass half empty when you're talking about we're not restricting, we're giving you the autonomy, but we really, in some ways, are, because we can't give you more resources. And so it's just how you look at that. And so thank you for being so positive in your presentation. We have great leaders in our buildings. It's 78 pages, this lovely thing that, no, I didn't have a glass of wine or a beer. I could barely get through
it. I recommend it.
It's complicated. I learned things as I was reading it, but it is complicated, it is onerous, and then when you bring this to your accountability in your PTA meetings, you synthesize it down in a way that is comprehensible to us as parents, and then ask us to say, what is your priority, and you're so patient when I know you guys know, look, we really need to be focusing on this, but I understand how this is really critical to you, and I hear that, and I'm going to work on that. That collaboration, so between strong leadership and engaged communities, we're going to continue to do great work for all kids. I also want to thank you for highlighting the safety, that I know that is critically important to the people in our buildings and to the families coming into our buildings, the ones that are working and the ones that we are serving, and for expanding the definition of safety to include a welcoming environment, facilities that are adequate, and so that great learning is happening. So I'm viewing safety in terms of a pullout as a broader category, because that is what, whether it's perceived safety or actual safety, perceived welcoming or actual, we need to be mindful of that in our process. So thank you for calling that out. And the comment about programs, thank you for your analogy of the sports, that all programs are valuable, all of them take extreme resources. So when you're looking at the high school lens, each one of these lenses is a little different. And I know we're focusing on elementary and middle a lot because of this transition, as we should be. The high school lens is a little different. And for our families and our kids, that programming is so critically important. And we recognize that there is inequities within that as well in terms of this balance, and that we're committed to continue to work on that. So thank you.
Ms. Harmon,
there were no questions. That was just my response to all your comments.
And I have to say to you that I believe we probably will have version 5 next year. And I know that we are continuously tweaking it and trying to improve it. And maybe as a board and a staff, we will find some ways to allocate a few additional dollars. But my point still is that the ultimate answer to this question, to many of the problems that you face daily, is a significant increase in that allocation, which is what we really need to do for our children. So on that note, thank you for your service to the district. We appreciate your efforts to ensure that our students are provided the best education in Colorado. Thanks for your presentation. With that, we're going to take a short break here because we need to change the panel. You guys can go ahead and leave, and we'll bring up the next group, which is a group to do a presentation on entrepreneurial efforts. We'll take, I hope, about a 7-minute break to transition here and then move forward. Thank you.
I need 7 and a half.